with as many listeners out there as there is speaker in here. If you listened to me last semester, you might have gained the false impression that I'm overly motivated by the work I do here. And indeed, we have a congenial team at Campus Radio, and working as a radio host comes with certain perks that, for your own sanity, I will not divulge in detail. You do not want to know what I do here at night alone in the office, and neither do I when I wake up next morning sober. But despite all the benefits and joy, I have been suffering from writer's block. And by writer, in this special case, I mean me, and by block, I mean my inability to perform creatively. You might not have noticed, but the texts were not my own. They were copied and cut from known science websites, written by talented science writers, whose work I shamelessly used without proper attribution. And thanks to Flying Spaghetti Monster, so few people listen in that nobody really bothers to sue me for copyright infringement. But nevertheless, for the ongoing semester, I resolve to bring myself more into the show instead of simply chewing mainstream news for you. But before I start, and I will eventually talk science, let's answer the question, what is science? A question you might have never bothered asking and are not the least bit interested in. You might even say, Boyang, are you going to fill the airtime with some random pseudo-philosophical babbling of yours because you have no actual content? Well, I will not deny the tiny grain of truth in that. However, last semester I plagiarized the topics from well-known websites which carry the words science, biology, or physics in their titles. There was the ontological certainty that it was about science. Now the show will more about what I do or I'm interested in. And I'm engaged in a broad range of activities, many of which I talk about openly, while the mentioning of some other might be considered a crime in some jurisdictions. So where's the line of demarcation between the mundane and science? You could define science as the content of a college curriculum for a science degree, or, if we are very tolerant in our definition, also for an engineering degree. You could also say, science is what scientists do. It sounds trivial, but sufficient. Because as long as scientists are not wiped off the face of Earth by a sudden cataclysmic event, they will raise new generations of scientists following their tradition, and science will continue until eternity, as long as its priests keep passing on their wisdom. And science evolves, not unlike religion, with the changing circumstances of time. But who is a scientist? Simple answer. Someone who is accepted as a scientist by other scientists. It sounds like a circular definition, but in some way that's how Google's PageRank algorithm works. And there is, incidentally, a very cool blog post by Scott Aronson with double A, titled Eigenmorality, like an eigenvector or eigenvalue, on his blog Städte Optimized. Städte, of course, is the Yiddish word for small towns with large Jewish populations in Central and Eastern Europe, or at least before the Germans marched in. And the article is about the attempt to define morality using an algorithm similar to PageRank, and it's a worthwhile read. But back to the definition of science. Another definition could be by the topics. So biology is about animals, plants and other living things, and physics and chemistry are about matters. Geology is about minerals and sediments, etc., etc. Or you could define it negatively by its popular counterpart, religion. So science is what religion is not. And with the retreat of religion from our political and social sphere, one day it might be fully vanished and will live in a so-called scientific world. Which reminds me of some governmental aides I saw a few years ago in China that campaigned for scientific progress, or scientific development, or a general scientific outlook. Science is understood as a worldview, a philosophy of life. Something that might be summarized in the maxim, there is no knowledge outside of science, and only actions that are guided by science are valid and good. Some might argue, including your humble host, which gives the following argument pretty much the highest authority possible on this program, that science only refers to certain methods and criteria that we apply to our theories. For example, scientific theories could be based on empirical, not could, should be based on empirical observations or experiments. An experiment should be replicable and valid for the hypothesis it is testing. A lot of Latin and Greek words. And theories should be falsifiable or at least testable by observations or experiments. And if it is testable, obviously it is also falsifiable. And if you know the outcome of the test, for example, it only confirms what you know, then it is not really a test, right? So yes, that was a very redundant handy ideas. So in that sense, science is content neutral. The methods that are used to analyze a dinosaur fossil can be equally applied to the remains of a creationist. The models used to simulate an insect population can be used to analyze players of World of Warcraft, with a minor difference that in the latter case, the average intelligence is lower. Science is thus defined as a set of methods to gain knowledge about the world. And the word science derives from the Latin word scire or scire in classical Latin, which means to know. When we say colloquially that we know something, then we often mean that what we know is a fact, and we know it to be true with certainty. But scientific methods cannot guarantee that any knowledge, or a better term would be theory, is true. Indeed, personally, I don't know any way to gain certain knowledge, and you should always be on alert when I use the word certain. Children often appeal to parental authority, but once they grow up, they'll realize that humans are fallible. And of course, some never grow up and they continue to refer to a divine authority. But God only talks to very few people. Some daring atheists even claim to none. So for the vast majority of us who are not gifted with prophecy, we still have this fundamental epistemological problem and the Royal Society's motto, Nullius in Verba, a liberal translation of which would be, take nobody's word for it, not even mine. So now we have a definition of science and lost all certainty of knowledge. Since we have cleared what science is, we can agree on what we'll be talking on for the next semester. Talking about something, definitely, yes. Whatever I want, that is the answer to the question. And I'll talk the most interesting science there is, my own research. And please imagine me doing finger quotes around the word research. So what is my quote, research, unquote? And to be honest, I'm not totally sure yet, but let's start with the Denisovans. Why the Denisovans? I don't really know, but I spent the whole weekend reading about them. That I haven't been bored to death is a certain sign that I'm destined to become an evolutionary geneticist. Denisovans are a species of the genus Homo, or a species of Homo sapiens. We don't really know for sure, because there's none of them alive, which poses some fundamental problem in studying their taxonomy. They were first discovered in the Denisova cave in the Altai Mountains in Russia, close to Mongolia, China, and Kazakhstan, And just like the Neanderthals are named after the Neander Valley in Germany, where their remains were first discovered, the Denisovans got their name from the place where they were first excavated. The cave itself is named after an 18th century hermit, Dionysi, whose life was so secluded that Wikipedia doesn't have an article on him, and not much I can talk about. So far, a finger bone and two teeth have been found of the Denisovans. And you may wonder, Boyang, how can you make up a new human species based on a couple of fragmented bones? Well, excellent question, Hubert. I can only assume you are a long-time listener whose critical thinking has been enormously sharpened by talking science. You see, traditional anthropology relies on the morphology, the form and size, etc. of the fossils to classify the discovery. For example, inspecting a single tooth, a trained anatomist might tell you the age, diet, dental health, possibly sexual orientation and favorite Star Trek character of the concerned individual. But of course, if you don't even know the species of the fossil that has withered tens of thousands of years, it becomes a little trickier. So summer 2010, when Benz Wuhler, an anthropologist from the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leibniz, saw an ancient molar in the Denisova cave during an excavation, he considered the tooth fragments too big and weirdly shaped to be human. He thought it belonged to a cave bear. Well, fortunately, he played safe and sent the find back to Svante Pebo, a Swedish, so excuse me if I can't pronounce his name properly. Pebo is the director of the Department of Evolutionary Genetics at the Max Planck Institute in Leibniz, and that's where the fun started. In April 2010, a paper, the complete mitochondrial DNA genome of an unknown hominin from southern Siberia, was published in Nature, volume 464. Hominin is kind of a tribe, something between a genus and the family. So, something that is not something that is probably a homo, but not a homo sapiens, not human, or what we would call human nowadays. Well, anyway, it is not a properly defined word anyway. So the Denisovans, this species is often called the Denisovan hominin. The lead author, Johannes Krause, then working in Pebo's lab, he sequenced the DNA from 30 milligrams of a finger bone found in the Denisova cave 2 years earlier in 2008. And hold on, you might say, how do you extract intact DNA from a bone that has been rotting thousands of years beneath Earth? Well, based on the dating of the layer, it's about 40,000 years. Typically, remains from that period contain less than 1% of endogenous DNA. Endogenous DNA is the DNA that belongs to the bone, which belongs to the individual, and to which the bone... Okay, that was a circular definition. So, the remains from that period contains often only less than 1% of indigenous DNA, while the vast majority is made up of DNA from microbes that have colonized the bone after its deposition. And the finger bone contained a very high amount of DNA, and the percentage, so the relative amount of endogenous DNA, is about 60 to 70%, while microbial DNA makes up only 30 to 50%. But even a very low percentage of endogenous DNA can be used for analysis thanks to modern technology, especially if you are only studying the mitochondrial DNA. The finger belonged to a child because the growth plate wasn't fused. But based on the morphological features, it was impossible to determine what species the child belonged to. So this analysis of the mitochondrial DNA yielded some unexpected surprise. The mitochondrial DNA is the DNA of the mitochondrion, which is an organelle found in all eukaryote cells. Indeed, it is a defining feature of eukaryotes. The established theory says that mitochondria were bacterial that were engulfed by archaea, another major domain of life, and thus the eukaryotes were born out of this endosymbiotic relationship. And in contrast to the rest of the cell, the mitochondrion has its independent genome separate from the one in the cell nucleus. Sexual recombination of DNA does not apply to mitochondrial DNA, so it is only inherited along the maternal line. So you got all your mitochondria from your mother, as everyone else, animals and plants. And there are many more copies of mitochondrial DNA per cell than nuclear DNA, which increases the chance of obtaining a useful sample. Therefore, it is especially suited for analyzing ancient DNA and establishing phylogenetic relationships among populations. Krauser et al. Aligned the Denisovan mitochondrial DNA sequence to the mitochondrial DNA of mtDNAs of 54 present-day modern humans. An early modern human from about the same period the Denisovan lived, 6 Neanderthals, 1 bonomo, a bonobo, or in Latin pan paniscus, and 1 chimpanzee, in Latin / Greek pan troglodyte, or troglodytes. Whereas Neanderthals differ from modern humans at an average of 202 nucleotide positions, the Denisova individual differs at an average of 385 positions, and the chimpanzee at 1,462 positions. The Denisovan mitochondrial DNA thus carries almost twice as many differences to the mitochondrial DNA of present-day humans as Neanderthal mitochondrial DNAs do. And a phylogenetic analysis shows that the Denisovan mitochondrial DNA Denisovan lineage branches off well before the modern human and Neanderthal lineages. The date of the most recent common mitochondrial ancestor shared by the Denisovans, Neanderthals, and modern humans is approximately 1 million years ago, which is about twice as deep as the most recent mitochondrial ancestor of modern humans and Neanderthals. So based on the analysis of the mitochondrial DNA, you might say that humans and Neanderthals split off about 500,000 years ago, and the Denisovans from the modern humans and Neanderthals about 1 million years ago. But that's not where the story stops. Well, the story doesn't stop ever. I introduce some references that I used. So for those who are interested in the Denisovans, there are two excellent and easily digestible summaries. One by Anne Gibbons from year 2011, titled "Who Were the Denisovans?" published in Science, volume 333. The other one is by Benz Viola and Svante Paabo, both from the Max Planck Institute, from year 2013, so last year, titled "What's New in Central Asia?" which is part of a Festschrift on the occasion of the 17th birthday of Anatoly Derebianko, director of the Institute of Archaeology and Ethnography at the Russian Academy of Sciences in Novosibirsk, whose efforts have been crucial in establishing the Denisova Cave and the surrounding regions as the new hotspot for human evolution. Next episode, I'll continue with the Denisovans, the analysis of the nuclear DNA, which yields some contradicting results to the mitochondrial DNA, and the relationship between the Denisovans and modern humans. So, stay tuned for the next 9 minutes, which is the scheduled time of the show. And tune in next week, same time, for more interesting science. Have a nice week. And I release you from talking science prematurely.
Smile a perfect teeth. I know they all got nice to rip on my skin. I know they all can smile with perfect teeth. I know they all got nice to rip on my skin. I know they all are living and death touch the tea. I know they oh, I know they all. I know they all will turn the perfect teeth, I know they all got nice to rip on my skin, I know they all are living in this touch of tea, I know they oh, I know they all.
Quite relegate me to the bone.